Six Pillars of Freedom on Freedom 970 KUFO AM Portland.
Investing Simplified is brought to you by Chuck Price, President and Wealth Manager of Price Financial Group, Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm. Individual situations will vary, and the information on this show should only be relied upon when coordinated with individual advice. Other parties present on this broadcast are not affiliated with Price Financial Group Wealth Management. Chuck can be contacted by visiting www.pfgwm.com. You can email Chuck a question at askchuck@pfgwm.com, or you can call him right now at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now, here's the host of Investing Simplified, Chuck Price.
We do Investing Simplified.
Well, good morning, Portland, Oregon. What a beautiful Saturday morning. The sun's trying to come through the clouds. It looks like it's going to be another wonderful day. And you're listening to Investing Simplified, where we answer your questions, the longest-running financial show in Oregon and the Northwest that take calls that have a CPA, an attorney, and a financial planner. And today we're without the CPA, but we're still going to do a tax segment. And in studio with me is Carl Jepson with the Warren Allen Law Firm.
Good morning, Chuck. Nice to be here. It's a lovely day to start the day off.
Absolutely. Well, you know, it's not bad when you got to drive in early in the morning, hardly any traffic, and you get to see a nice, clear day. It's not bad.
That's nice. Although I understand that's up for a change, perhaps. But
you know. Yeah. And just a little heads up to all our listeners, just in case you haven't heard, tonight is the night that you've got to spring forward and move your clock ahead. So don't forget. Otherwise, when you wake up Sunday morning, you may miss where you got to be. If you got to be somewhere on time, you may be late. So you want to make sure you move your clock forward. Well, listen, if you want to call and you have a question, give us a call. We also have a toll-free number now. It's 1-800-990-0750. That's 1-800-990-0750. Because I know we have a lot of listeners up in Central Oregon. I know we have a lot of listeners up in Washington State, up north of Washington State. I know we have a bunch south and on the coast. So if you're in Oregon or Washington and you want to call in and you're long distance, you don't have to make a long distance call. You can, again, call us at 800-990-0750 and locally 503-417-7626. And, you know, for this show, I'm going to do a special thing, Carl, because you and I have our copy and I've been reading this book and I think it's just power-packed full of a lot of stuff. But in honor of the fact that we're going to have Harry Dent on our show next Saturday, and if you're doing anything next weekend, you ought to mark your calendar for 8 o'clock next Saturday morning. We're going to have Harry Dent in studio live on the air. Actually, he's going to be in Tampa, but he's going to be on the air live with us. And we're going to be talking about the demographic cliff, how to survive and prosper during the Great Deflation of 2014-2019 by Harry S. Dent Jr. And if you call in the show today and you want a book, I have some of these books, and you can buy them on Amazon too, but I've got them in here free. I will give you a free copy. If you call in today, ask a question of either Carl or myself. Kevin, unfortunately, is not here today because he's got to do taxes. But if you got a question, you call in today, I will give you a free book.
You know, I've been reading that book too. And he packs so much information, and he comes at he basically tries to answer the why of economics, I guess you might say. And it's very complicated in some respects because he looks at many, many different things. And it's very, very interesting. I can only read a little bit at a time, though, because it's pretty packed with information.
Well, you know, Carl, I've been a follower of Harry Dent for many, many years. And one of the things that's always amazed me is the flack that Harry Dent has gotten from the news people, particularly the financial news people who don't. And this just is amazing to me because it's so common sense. If you really think about it, all Harry talks about is demographics, and that is that we do certain things as a species based on the age we are. Like, for example, one of the things I remember at 43 is the time of your life that you buy the most potato chips you ever buy in your life.
Right. And somewhere in your 40s is the time that you're likely to spend the most money on a house. And then later on, you spend less.
Yeah. But what gets me is people who understand investing and buying and selling, wouldn't it make sense that demographics would dictate how people are spending money and their hands dictate what's going to happen in the marketplace?
You would certainly think so. I mean, certainly there may be slight changes, but overall, I mean, you know, the same thing happens whether you're really modern or not, and that is you get older.
Well, yeah, and your spending habits change.
Yep.
Just like your travel habits, your driving habits, and everything else. So I think Harry's gotten a lot of bad press, basically, because people don't like demographics and don't want to face the fact that it is what it is. But anyway, if you got a question, give us a call. I am going to talk about stocks right now. I'm going to talk about the stock market. I'm going to talk about some things that, you know, one of the things I got to say that, you know, this jobs report came out yesterday, and you would have thought that the market was going absolutely berserk, and said, you know, wow, jobs, that's why the market's up. Look, when you hear these reports, have a little common sense and listen to what the guys are saying. Every day is not dictated of what the markets are doing. Every day, yeah. Now, certainly if there's a war created or some major corporation goes bankrupt or Bank America lays off, 150,000 employees, that's big news. You know, I mean, something like that happens, that could affect the market. Okay, little things about the job report, unless it's really drastic or it's really great, isn't really going to affect the outlook of the economy. And people are going to look at it and say, okay, well, we're getting more jobs. Okay, maybe I can put a little more money in the market. Or we're not having more jobs. Maybe we're going to pull my money out of the market. Well, if that was the case, anybody in their right frickin' mind in the last 13 years wouldn't have any money in the market because the market has sucked. And so, really, I don't believe it makes a difference. I think people are going to invest when they invest. I think people get the excitement about it when the market's going up. And I've told this story on here a couple of times, and this past week I've met a lot of people off the radio show who have come in and had me do a financial checkup and review their investments and stuff and give them some ideas. But, you know, one of the things I tell everybody is you look at this market the way it's going, and it's been coming up since the crash in 07, and it's been coming up and up and up. But most people didn't get even till March of 2013. So, you know, you're talking about a 4.5-year spread there. And now we're in that fifth year, and we're heading into that time when we're probably going to have another correction. But people need to have a little common sense when it comes to investing. And I always tell the story about Joe Kennedy. I told it here a couple weeks ago, but it's worth saying again. Joe Kennedy cashed all his money out of the market before the crash, day before the crash. And afterwards, a reporter came to him and said, "Hey, Joe, how did you know? How did you know to get out of the market and go to safety and get out of the way of the crash?" And he said every day he walked to work, he would get his shoe shined by a shoe shine boy. And he said that day he went to work, and the shoeshine boy was telling him all about all the stocks he was buying and giving him stock tips. And he said, "Listen, if everybody's buying and everybody's out there buying stocks and got stock tips for you, that's telling you better get out of the market because everybody's in it, and it's gonna backslide." And sure enough, good old Joe hit it right on the head. And so I would say to you, and you listen to these guys on the radio, when we break through the barriers, and Harry Dent's talked about this several times on our show, we break through these barriers, you better just hang on. Because that's usually what happens. You break through these barriers, everybody starts dumping their money in. And I'm going to give you this tip. If I'm going to make everybody out there some money today. If you have stocks and you have a lot of capital gains in them, you need to call your advisor, you need to call your broker, and you need to put a stop loss in them. You need to decide how much gain you want to pay capital gains on, and you need to decide at what point do you want to lose. And I'm going to give a perfect example here. Let's say you bought a stock at $20 a share 5 years ago, 10, it doesn't matter when. You bought it at $20 a share. It's sitting at $100 a share right now. You got an $80 gain, capital gain. Nobody likes to pay taxes, and I do not either. However, If that stock has a chance to go from $100 down to $50, you just lost $50 a share. What you need to say to yourself is, okay, that stock's selling at $100. Would I be unhappy if I lost $10 a share? If I lost 10%, could I live with that? Would it change my lifestyle? If it dropped 20%, would I be happy? Now, most people wouldn't be happy losing 20%. So I would recommend to you to put a stop loss on your stock. Maybe go in there and say, okay, it's trading at $100 a share. I only paid 20 for it. You know what? If I make 4.5 times or 5 times on that stock, I'm going to be pretty darn happy. So maybe I'll put a stop loss at 90 to 95 bucks somewhere. But I'd put a stop loss on it because you know what? Just in case Dent's right, just in case we're right, we're going to have a market correction. You at least are going to retain the gains. And here's the other thing. If that happens, and I've told people this in the past, and we've been saying it for a long time. Look, if you own a stock, cost basis is fixed. You're not going to change it. It is what it is. You're going to pay the capital gains. But then you can turn right around. Let's say that stock was 100 bucks a share today. It drops down to 40 or 50 or 60. And you think it's a great long-term stock, you can take your capital gain anyway, take the money, pay your taxes, take the difference, rebuy the stock back again at 60 bucks. Now you got a cost basis of 60, and if it goes back up to 100, hey, not a bad deal. You made 120 bucks a share on that thing.
You know, you've talked about the stop loss mechanism before, but I understand it, and I'm talking as a layperson as far as stock stuff is concerned. My understanding is that's basically just an automatic sell. In other words, the stock goes to, you know, from 100 to 80 or 195 to back down to 95. That's the point. And you prearrange that with your advisor and your broker and stuff that when it reaches that, if it reaches that, it automatically gets sold.
That's correct. Yeah. That's correct. And, you know, and the other thing is that in the story about Joe Kennedy that I told, one of the things I didn't say about it is Joe Kennedy called his stockbroker, said, I want to sell everything. Stockbroker said, Joe, you're crazy. You can't sell everything. He said, listen, I want you to sell everything. I want a new broker. And the guy sold everything. And what I'm saying is, if you go to your advisor and you want to put in a stop loss and he doesn't want to do it, you tell him to put it in or you're getting a new broker. Because that is his job. They're his or her job. Their job is to make you money and to watch out for you. And if your advisor hasn't been talking to you about stop losses, I am. I'm telling you, you need to have them. And I've been telling this for the last 6 months that you need to put. And I tell all my clients, when you buy individual stock, you need to move right on up with a stop loss on that stock. If you bought a stock at 20, like we were saying, it moved up to 70, maybe you put one in at 60. I don't know, 10% to me is a threshold of loss. Some people it's 20. But if you already made money on that, don't be a pig. Remember about the pigs and the hogs getting slaughtered. You know, there's a time when you take your gains off the table, or at least protect your gains off the table and live to fight another day.
You know, it's kind of like the Gamblers Anonymous sort of thing where they say, you know, go with an idea of how much you're going to spend, and if you lose that much, go home.
That's correct. Yeah. You know, Kenny Rogers' song, The Gambler, is really great about stocks, too. You got to know when to hold them, when to fold them, and when to walk away. And there's a time to walk away. But I like to say that the other example of gambling, if you're going to go in and gamble and you can afford to lose $1,000 and you're going to start with $1,000, hey, if you lose that $1,000, you got to have the nerve to say, that's it. That's all I'm doing. I'm walking out of here. And don't go in and write another check or charge money on your card or something and do another $1,000.
But just one more roll will get me there, right?
yeah. That's the famous last words. It's like the guy, one more drink and I'll be okay until he gets in a car wreck. Well, listen, I'm going to give a quick stock report here because these are some things I do want you to know because, you know, the market has moved up. And I'm always a little cautious when I see the market moving up because I personally don't believe the money's there. And I don't see anybody calling. But listen, we do have some lines open if you want to call 503-417-7626. 1-800-990-0750. There is no foolish question when it comes to your money. So give us a call. Listen, the Dow Jones closed at 16,452. We just keep getting higher and higher. It was up 30 points. Now, 30 points is not a big move for a report. I mean, everybody's talking about how great, you know, the report was, but 30 points, you know, 19 basis points, that's not a move. Anyway, the stock market, if you look back and get reality, if you go back to 10-9-07 when we had the crash and the market was at 14,164.53, that was the day before the crash. The market, since the market collapse and recovery, the Dow Jones is up 16.15%. That's in 6.6 years and 5 months. That's an average of 2.52% per year. That is not a big return. That is not even close to the 80-year average of the Dow Jones. The Dow closed at 12/31/99 at 11,497.12. That means it's up 43.1% in 13 years and 2 months. That's a 3.27% return over 13 years. That's not an exciting return. The S&P 500 stocks, S&P closed again, another high, 18,7804. It was up 1%. Or excuse me, it was up 1.01. It was only up 0.05%, a half a percent. And you look at that. You look at that return. And if we look at the S&P where it stands versus the previous all-time high at 10907 of 15,6515, we're up 19.99% in 6 years and 5 months. That's 3.12% per year. If you go back to 12/31/99, the S&P closed at 14,6925. We're up 27.82, not in a year, but in 13 years and 2 months, which means 2.11%. So let me get this straight. We're in a great market when the Dow Jones over the last 13 years and 2 months is up 3.27% per year, and the S&P over that same period is up 2.11% per year. I mean, hey, listen, if this isn't a long-term bear market, I've never seen one, and we've had them, and they last 16 to 22 years, and we're in the dead middle of one. No question about it.
You know, that's one of the interesting things. One of the things you often comment on is that many of the commentators, the other commentators, say, you know, are focused on the short term. They're focused on what happened in the last month or the last year. And unfortunately, that's kind of one of the things that's problematic with, you know, even some of the companies that, you know, that they're so concerned about the stock return on or their stock price that, you know, they do certain things to stimulate that and to make it happen without taking a look at the long term as to how well it's going to make the company work over 10 years or something like that. And it seems to me that they kind of, you know, leverage their long-term performance against making the short-term investor satisfied.
Well, you know, Carl, that is a great question, and you're a great straight man for me because that's a perfect timing on that question. The other day I met with a client, and I went over their 401k, and I went over some of the things they had in the 401k. And I always ask people when they come in to do a review with me to bring their 401k and let me see the options. And usually when it shows the options, it shows their return. Well, I take these funds and I put them on my computer, and I can actually analyze a fund for you. And one of the real problems most people have, there is a big, big difference between average annual return and real rate of return. In other words, the money that you really have. And when you sit down and you look at some of these funds that you're looking at the report, and when it goes back 5 years, they've had an average annual return of 12-13%. But when we go back and look at the 10-year return, the return is 6 or 4. And you say, well, wait a minute, why is it so much better? Because it's where you start. There's an old thing that said that figures don't lie, but liars figure. I always tell people, if you're going to look at a fund, you look at the long-term results, not the short-term results. Are you buying that fund for the short-term or the long-term? If you're a trader and you're just trading it, then you're looking for the dip. You're going to buy it on the dip, sell it on the high. I don't have a problem with that if you have the ability to do that. But most people don't. And most people look at those numbers and say, holy cow, this thing's up 13% a year for the last 5 or 6 years. Well, yeah, that's because they based it at the bottom of the recovery. Of course, it better be up. It better be up a lot because you had to play catch up. Of course, if you weren't in it, if you were the sucker that was in it the 5 years before, your return's only about 6%, and you played catch-up the last 4.5 years. So, big difference. Well, we're going to take a quick break and come back with Carl's comments. You're listening to Investing Simplified. Again, if you want to call us, ask a question, 503-417-7626 or 800-990-0750. You're listening to Investing Simplified. We'll be
Price Financial Group, Wealth Management. We do investing simplified.
The time to stop working is approaching, or maybe it's already arrived. CDs and money markets are paying only fractions of a point. How secure do you feel about retiring right now? Call Chuck Price. He's located right here in Portland. And he can show you how to increase your Social Security up to 67% using specific program rules and the file and suspend strategy. Chuck specializes in working with people who are either retired or are close to retiring, and he focuses on how to never run out of money during retirement. Do this today. Schedule a free 20-minute retirement plan phone consultation or schedule an appointment with Chuck himself. Call 503-253-3000. That's 503-253-3000. Chuck Price at Price Financial Group Wealth Management. On the web at pfgwm.com. Got a legal question? Coming up is Carl Jepson, estate planning attorney and partner of the Warren Allen Law Firm, with Carl's comments. You can call Carl at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Here's Carl Jepson.
Welcome back to Investing Simplified. This is Carl Jepson, and it's time for Carl's comments. This is the time when I try to talk about something that's come up in my practice in the last week or two. And this last week, I had an interesting email from someone who had been listening to the show, and thank you very much. And he was very interested in the now and then I do lists of, 10 things or 10 practical tips or things like that that you can do for certain subjects. And he was very interested in those and wanted to know a little bit more about one of them that I did last week. So what I thought I'd do today is I've got a couple of those things that I'd like to revisit with you, just for those of you who've never had a chance to hear it. But I'm going to go through them fairly quickly. The one is, first of all, this one often comes up is so how do you select an estate planning attorney if you want? So I have 10 specific ideas or questions that you can ask of your estate planning attorney to get a feel for whether or not he's the right person for you. First of all, how much of your practice is comprised of estate planning? 2, how long have you been practicing? 3, how much do you charge for a simple will? This is a trick question, because if he says, well, it's, some number, that's kind of hard, because one person's simple will is another person's project. And you have to be a little cautious with that question. Ordinarily, they'll say, well, it depends on what you mean by simple will. So number 4, how are your fees charged? An hourly rate or a flat fee? Is there a possibility of an hourly rate with a cap? In other words, if it goes over so much, that becomes the flat fee. So is it a flat fee plus extras? Some people do that. Does it change depending on what the documents are? So it's important to understand, and most lawyers, I think, are pretty good about it, but I always want to let people know, at least within a range, where they're going to be at the end of the day, so that they're not, surprised by some bill that they weren't expecting. And nobody likes that, makes them mad, and it's not something we really want in the practice, at least not I don't. So 5 is how are the fees to be paid? Do you have to pay a retainer up front? If it's a fairly substantial project, that's probably a good idea for most people, because quite frankly, it's difficult to spend a whole lot of time on something and then find out that, maybe something just doesn't work out. So that's a good idea. But if there's no retainer, then usually it's usually paid on a monthly basis. That's what most people do. Or sometimes people just do it at the end of the day. Depending on the project, if it's a small project that's not going to take very long, I'm more inclined to, just have people you know, pay when they come in and sign the documents. So that's what a lot of people do. Number six, do you have any litigation experience in probate or estate planning matters? The reason I suggest asking this question is because a lot of times knowing what happens when things go wrong, in other words, if you have to go to court and litigate some issues in estate planning, it gives you a different side of the coin, a little bit better insight, I think, into what is important in the documents themselves. So, seven, if requested, will your attorney provide you with drafts of the estate planning documents? I know some lawyers that never give drafts. I think it's very important for people to see things in print, and because sometimes it doesn't look the same way that they think it is going to look when they talk about it with the lawyer. So I think it's a good idea to have drafts just so that you can get a sense of what the finished product is going to look like. Number eight, what assistance does the attorney provide in transferring assets to a living trust? This varies quite a bit. And this is an important part because if the assets aren't transferred to the living trust, you may have been, you know, defeating the purpose to a certain extent anyway. Number nine, will the attorney answer the occasional question about your estate plan over the phone without billing you every time? This is an issue that a lot of people get upset about. You know, they call in the next day and they get billed, you know, some money for some question that they just forgot to ask the day they were in the office. Generally, I don't do that. I usually, unless somebody calls me, you know, 6 months later and asks me a long question, I typically just answer the question and don't worry about it. And because if there's something that needs to be done, then you know, they'll feel better about it and come in and ask me to do it rather than somebody else. So let's see, 9, 10, will the attorney give you any clients' names as references? This is a little touchy, and I'll tell you why. Because there's a client confidentiality issue that comes into play. So if the lawyer says, no, I really don't feel like I can do that, don't feel put off by that. However, a lot of times, if your referral to this lawyer was from another client, that's a good thing. Then you know, the client has the right to say, yeah, I liked him or I didn't. And I think that's one of the best referrals that I get are from other clients who said, yeah, I really felt that we were treated well when we came into the office. So those are my 10 points on selecting an attorney. And they're practical, but a lot of times people forget to ask some of those kinds of questions. So what do you think, Chuck?
Well, I think it's important, whether you go visit with an attorney or a CPA, that you have a list of questions to ask that professional you're talking to. And I think you bring up some really good points, because if you're going to talk to somebody...
I've been out there. If you're going to talk to somebody about doing your estate plan or doing investing for you or your taxes, you got to make darn sure that they know what they're doing. They work in that area. So I think an estate planning attorney who does estate planning once in a while is probably not going to be up on it as somebody who does it as a regular day. You know, it's the same thing in my practice. I mean, somebody who works in a certain area all the time, you know, we specialize in retirement accumulation and retirement distribution and helping our clients not run out of money. Not everybody works in that area. A lot of people just work in the accumulation side where they're working with maybe a younger client growing their portfolio. I tend to work with more of the older client who doesn't want to take high risk, doesn't want to run out of money. So it's a little different. And your clientele is probably more in line with mine because you're working with people who want to take care of their estate and take care of that.
Yeah, that's certainly true. I would say that the greater portion of my clientele are just exactly the same people that you work with for the most part. But, you know, certainly I have young people as well. I think I tend to see more people that are older, but the young people is fine. I mean, because they're usually a lot simpler because their circumstances are not as complex as the older person a lot of times, and so they don't have to spend as much. Usually, things like the so-called simple will, but you know, they're looking to make sure that they've nominated a guardian for their children. They want to make sure that if they are, you know, both killed in a car crash, that their assets go to who they want it to. You know, those things can be done very, very simply. They're not worried about, you know, retirement quite yet, you know, or any of that kind of stuff. And they're not really concerned about, incapacity that they might, you know, become incapacitated and not be able to manage their own affairs and those kinds of things. So certainly that's true. But but I love to have them too, then, because they grow old as well.
Well, you know, one of the things when I do meet with, and a lot of times I end up meeting with the kids of my clients, because I like to make sure that the kids are informed in what the parents are doing. And also I want to meet with them because I tell them, look, if something happens to you, I'm going to end up having to meet with your kids and talk about your investment portfolio. So I want to make sure they know who I am. And I have no problem if you ever want to bring your kids in and talk to me about your portfolio. I think it's a good idea. But what I find is, you know, people as they're younger, they believe they're bulletproof and they don't have to worry about their will. They don't have to worry about those things. And if you have kids, that's just the opposite of the way it really ought to be. You really need to plan for that because, like you said, Carl, if something does happen, of course, the odds are against it. But if it does, you need to make sure you have provisions for who is going to take care of your kids.
Absolutely. Well, you know, kind of along those lines, you know, we're talking about what happens to people, you know, later on if the bad thing does happen to them. And of course, you and I, because we do have an older clientele, we see it more often, I think, than many people. And that kind of segues me into the next 10 things, and that is 10 ways to convince mom or dad to move out of their home. And this is a big...
Well, good luck.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, but it's a very difficult, but it's one that many, many people face. And so, number one, occasionally plant the seed that another living situation could be safer, easier, and even fun. Number two, watch for teachable moments. You know, like mom takes a fall but isn't really seriously hurt, or dad leaves the stove running and the pot of soup burns into charcoal. You know, maybe mom or maybe dad can't have the strength to start the mower anymore. You know, the doctor reports that mom or dad to the DMV and they lose their license. You know, those kinds of things. What are they going to do if they can't drive? Those are teachable moments. Number three, check with mom and dad's friends. Do any of them live in an assisted care place or a retirement place that they like and that they could recommend to their parents? Number four, stress the safety aspects of retirement community. This is really, you know, one of the serious dangers for elderly people is to be isolated and then injured in their own home and without, you know, any assistance. Nobody sees that they're hurt or sick or, you know, worse. Number five, stress the no maintenance aspect of a retirement community. You know, as you get older, you know, I had a friend of mine who retired. I asked him what it was like to be retired. He said, well, he says, everything hurts a little more and takes a little longer.
Good answer.
And I'm thinking, well, you know, that's, you know, when you're talking about maintenance kinds of stuff, if it's taking longer and hurting more, it's probably less attractive than it might have been before. Number six, stress the social aspect of retirement community. Now, this is a little delicate situation because some people don't necessarily, you know, they kind of want to shy away from that. Others really don't want to be lonely. So, you know, it just depends. Number seven, show your interest in the parents maintaining as much independence and privacy as they can. This is really important. You know, when you start talking about this subject, they tend to think that you're ready to, you know, ship them off to the farm. And it's important to let them know that one of the things you want really for them is the most independent life that they can possibly have without extraordinary danger. So that's number one. Number eight, point out if they wait until something bad happens, they may have to skip over the retirement community and go straight to the nursing home. So that's another or much more, you know, intensive care kind of place. Number nine, enlist friends, family members, and even a church pastor to talk to the parent to kind of persuade them that maybe it's time. And number 10, be sensitive to their feelings. You know, don't rush, but be persistent. Acknowledge their fears and concerns and be respectful of all the stuff they can't take with them. In other words, you know, we got to remember they're going to be downsizing quite a bit. And boy, I'll tell you what, that's a hard choice when they're trying to pack it into a one-bedroom apartment or something. So you know, anyway, there's my 10 things.
You know, Carl, one of the things I do talk to my clients about, and we do talk once in a while about that conversation about them, and I always tell them, I think you want to stay in your home as long as you can. I think most people really want to stay in that comfort zone because it is a comfort zone. It's, you know, you really don't want to go out of there if you don't have to. But But everybody has to realize at some point in your life, if you live long enough, you're not going to be able to remain in your home. I mean, perfect scenario is you're in your home, you go to sleep, and that's it. You don't wake up and you're gone. And that happens a lot of times. But the reality is for a lot of people, they live longer than they think they're going to live, and they have to get out of that house. And from a safety standpoint, it just makes sense. And that's a hard thing to sometimes to communicate to people, because for some reason, as we get older, we get a little more stubborn. Some of us.
I couldn't speak to that.
Well, you've certainly seen it.
I think my wife would be say different. But
You certainly. I'm talking about our clientele now. So,
of course.
And so, but we all know, you know, one of the great things about doing what I'm doing is I can see the good and the bad of it. You know, and you hope you don't end up being that way either. And a lot of our clients aren't. A lot of our clients do communicate with their kids, do talk with their kids, and say, you know, maybe for safe reasons and healthy reasons, I need to be in a place where I got better care. Because a lot of time your kids are busy running their life, and they're busy running their life and their kids and just doing day-to-day activity that they don't always have the time to be there 100% of the time to protect their mom and dad. And they may want to be there, but they can't be there. It just doesn't work out. And so they need to have those facilities to help people.
Yeah, the unfortunate reality of today's younger person's life is that they work very hard. They work long hours. They have all sorts of commitments if they have children and other activities. And so their time, as far as their ability to, you know, care for mom and dad, are just severely limited. The old days when everybody lived on the farm and, you know, mom and dad just, you know, got tucked away in the back bedroom and the whole family pitched together to take care of them for the rest of their life until they died. You know, that's just not really possible, because a lot of times the people, the young people, or both of them, are gone from the home the whole day.
Well, both of them have to work.
They have to work, sure. So, and that's one of those things that's a little, you know, I think a lot of times the elder parent doesn't really quite respect or understand. They want to live with their children, which it's just not really usually economically feasible to do that. So, anyway.
Well, listen, we're going to take a quick break and go to the tax investigator. Even though Kevin isn't here today, I'm going to do a little special report on the President Obama's 2015 budget, and I haven't heard any too many people talking about this on TV or on financial stations, so we're going to talk about it here on Investing Simplified. We'll be right back.
When your legal rights and responsibilities are involved, you need attorneys you can trust. The attorneys at the Warren Allen Law Firm offer you solid legal advice and exceptional service. We practice in nearly all areas of law. We can help you with your legal needs, including wills, trusts, probate, contracts, real estate, construction, landlord rights, business, personal injury, divorce, bankruptcy, and civil litigation. The Warren Allen Law Firm has represented individuals and businesses for over three decades, and its nine attorneys have more than 200 years of combined experience practicing law. By combining experience and knowledge with individualized attention and prompt service, Warren Allen is the law firm to rely on when you are in need of legal representation. We are conveniently located at 850 Northeast 122nd Avenue near the I-205 and I-84 interchange. I'm Carl Jepson, partner with the Warren Allen Law Firm, and I invite you to contact us at 503-255-8795 or on the web at warrenallen.com.
Do you have a tax question? Here's your opportunity to ask the tax investigator, Kevin Stege, CPA and partner of the Baker Colson CPA firm. You can call Kevin at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now here's the CPA with the tax answers, CPA Kevin Stege.
Well, welcome back to Investing Simplified. I'm going to impersonate Kevin Stege today, and I'm going to give a little tax report, which means please bear with me. However, if you have questions, give us a call. We're here to answer your questions. You can reach us at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626, or toll-free 800-990-0750. Well, on March 5th, Wednesday, President Obama's 2015 budget includes some possible retirement planning game changers. And so for that, Brian, I got a little music there for people to hear.
You say you want a revolution.
Well, I think that's a very appropriate song for all of us baby boomers who remember this song very well in our teenage years and maybe earlier. But remember that song Revolution, because I think we're going to have a revolution in this country if we don't start looking at seniors and people who did everything they're supposed to do, and instead of rewarding them, you start penalizing them because they saved their money, they put their money away, they planned for retirement. And so what you do is, for the people who don't want to work and put stuff away, you start taxing the people that did do what they said they were going to do. It's kind of crazy. We got kind of a mixed-up world right now, and that song is very appropriate. You want to hear that song, listen to the whole thing.
Well, there was a theory one time about along those lines as far as a revolution was concerned. They suggested that instead of sending young men to war, they send old guys to war because they're already angry and sore.
Absolutely. I think that's a great idea. I think all of our politicians who vote for war should be in the front lines. We might have less wars. Anyway, talking about the budget, and you may not have heard about this on any of the shows or any of the financial shows, but to me, this is a really, really big thing. Harmonize the RMD rules for Roth IRAs and other retirement plans. Now, I want to emphasize, this is proposed. This is not law. Hopefully, anybody out there who's got a retirement plan is going to be contacting your congressmen and your senators and saying, hey, guys, no, do not pass this budget. Do not do this. But they're talking about everybody who went and converted their IRAs to Roths. They paid the taxes right now up front. On the idea that they wouldn't have to draw it out, they could pass it to their heirs, and it would all be tax-free. That was the whole idea. Pay your taxes now, then you don't have to pay them later. Like the oil Fram filter, pay me now or pay me later. Anyway, under the proposed law, this is the new one that's going to catch everybody's eye. And if you're not looking at this, you're not listening to it, if you did a Roth IRA, you better be. President Obama's physical budget for 2015 calls for a provision that would require Roth IRAs to follow the same required minimum distribution rules as other retirement accounts. In other words, you'd have to begin doing an RMD on your Roth IRA when you turn 70 and a half, the same way you do on a traditional IRA and other retirement accounts. If this were to pass, it would be a major game changer when it comes to retirement planning. One of the big things we've talked to our clients throughout the years is a Roth IRA is a great supplement if you have a good retirement plan, a good pension plan, because you can leave the money tax-free. You don't have to take it out. You can pass it to your heirs. Now, to me, they also want to create a 28% maximum benefit retirement account contribution. This is another big one. You know, we should be encouraging people to save money, not save money. I mean, this is just insane. They're saying that they would limit anybody for an IRA or 401k would be limited to 28% as a result of certain high-income taxpayers making contributions to retirement accounts would not receive a full tax deduction for amounts contributed or deferred. Example, currently an individual with $500,000 of taxable income can defer $10,000 in a 401k. They will not pay federal income tax on the $10,000. Without that salary deferral, that income would be taxed at 39.6%, currently the highest federal income tax rate. However, if the proposal were to become effective, that $10,000 would effectively be taxed at 11.6, 39 by minus 28, 11.6. Since the max tax benefit for a client would receive would be limited to 28%, that equates to an additional tax bill of more than $1,000. So the point is, taxes are going to go up. But why are they going after a retirement plan? Here's another one that just kind of drives me a little nuts. They want to do a mandatory 5 rule of non-spouse beneficiaries. Most IRAs and other retirement plans, non-spouse beneficiaries may require you to empty inherited IRA accounts by the end of the 5th year. After the year, the IRA owners, known as the 5-year rule, the proposal does call for certain exemptions to this rule, such as a disabled beneficiary or child who has not yet reached age of majority. Look, If this happens, this is going to be the death of the Stretch IRA, one of the greatest planning tools we've ever had to help our clients pass money to their heirs where they can draw that IRA out over their lifetime. This is absolutely insane to change that law. But I'm telling you, it is a game changer. Those two things are total game changers.
Yeah, the Stretch IRA, just for those who are not familiar with it, is just a mechanism whereby when the owner of the IRA dies, it allows their beneficiary, instead of calculating the required minimum distributions over a 5-year period or over the period of the lifetime of the owner, but then it's the person who gets it, and they can use their lifetime or a longer period to stretch the IRA out, you know, even further, so that they don't have to, you know, for example, if they're under 59 and a half, they don't really have to start taking the money out. So,
well, actually, on the Stretch IRA is for non-spouse beneficiary, mm-hmm. and so if your spouse has passed away and you're going to leave your IRA to your children, they get to draw that out. Now, there are some regulations and if you were 70 and a half and you were drawing, they have to continue paying every year in RMD and draw it out, but they get to draw it out over their lifetime.
Right.
So, you know, 30, 40 years maybe longer. So that was a great benefit for people to accumulate money and to have a parent pass their retirement plan on to their heirs. And to take that away is would be really hard on a lot of people and create a lot of tax for the government. They also want to allow non-spouse beneficiaries to make a 60-day rollover of inherited assets. One of the other major problems we have is when you have an inherited beneficiary before, because you're taking the RMD on it and you're stretching it out over your lifetime. The unfortunate thing is if you went and cashed that out and took it out and then you couldn't do a rollover, or if you had the money sent to you by mistake before you came to your senses and didn't use it as a stretch inherited IRA, you can't right now under the current law roll that over. Well, under this new law, this is one good thing, and I'm going to give them one attaboy here, because out of three, that ain't bad, but this is one good one. And the only reason they're doing that, though, is they know they're going to turn around and get the pound of flesh, because they no longer can stretch it.
Yeah, right, then they can't stretch it out. I was going to say, they can roll it into a short-term deal.
Well, they're still going to get the money paid to the government in 5 years.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just it's crazy. But at least, you know, if they just kept that part of it and get rid of all the other, I'd be happy. They also got a mandatory. Now, this is going to hurt a lot of small businesses. And this is the problem I have with government. Most of these guys have never made a payroll. They've never ran a business. They've never lived in your shoes. In fact, a few years ago, they did a survey and they asked some senators and congressmen. And I remember one of them was a senator from Oregon. And I won't mention his name, although it's RW. You can figure that one out. Anyway, they asked him how much toilet paper was. They asked him how much a gallon of milk cost. They asked him what a gallon of gasoline cost. They had no idea. They had no clue, because they don't live in the same world you and I live in. They don't stop at the store and buy milk. They don't buy toilet paper. I guess they don't. Somebody buys a form. I'm sure they use a lot. Anyway,
I'm tempted to a comment, but I'm just going to leave that one alone.
Yeah, it could be bad.
Yeah.
Anyway, just going on here, the point is, these people don't understand reality that you and I live with every day. They want to do a mandatory auto enrollment in IRAs for certain small businesses. If you have 10 employees or more, you know, you could be a struggling business trying to survive, hiring people, trying to keep your employees working. And I have a client who's struggled the last 5 years unbelievably, and he has virtually taken all of his own personal retirement money to pay employees to keep them working. So he's more worried about his employees not having a job, having to go on unemployment, than it is for him to make a living. And I can tell you, this guy for the last 5 years has lived on nothing. But he is a great guy, and he keeps his employees on, and he makes payments out of his own personal money to keep them working. But you go adding a thing like this, if you got 10 employees, you've got to do a retirement plan whether you want to do one or not, and you got to do a 3% contribution to the employees. I got to tell you, that could bankrupt some people. It could run them right out of business. And I think unfortunately, we can never get common sense in government. But at some point in time, they need to, the congressmen and the senators need to start consulting with average day Americans and average business owners who are trying to survive, trying to hire people, trying to do the right thing in the economy. And yet these idiots back there keep throwing roadblock after roadblock after roadblock, adding a tax here, adding a tax there. And all that comes up to is the little business owner having to write another check. And sometimes they don't have that money to write. I mean, listen, not every business owner is rich. I have to admit, you know, to me, there are three ways to become wealthy in America. I mean, really, there are three ways. One is to buy real estate and be a successful real estate buyer and seller and or accumulator. Another one is to invest in the market. You know, you take risks, you get rewards, and if you're really good at doing risk and reward, you're gonna make a lot of money. The third is owning a business, is somebody who owns a business. I mean, look at there's a lot of them. Bill Gates, as comes to mind, is not a bad choice to start a business. You know, it amazes me that in America we still have the land of opportunity that those things happen. But if you're trying to kill them at every step of the way with taxes and legislation, it's kind of counterproductive.
You know, I think you made is a real interesting point, because you can have small businesses that appear to have, you know, if you look at just the gross money that came in the door as a result of whatever the business did, may very well look like a lot of money. But after you deduct all of the stuff that has to go out, the amount that actually, you know, returns to the owner may not be very much at all. There are many small businesses that, you know, like you said, 3%, they might not have a 3% profit margin. They might not have that. That might not be what's coming back to them.
Yeah, there's a lot of small businesses in this town that don't make profit. They just barely make it from day to day to day. And I mean, you know, you think about people out there that are making it day to day on their paycheck. Well, imagine if you had money counting on people coming in to pay, you didn't have a salary, and you had to count on customers coming in and paying their bills on time so that you could turn around and make your payroll, pay for the lights, pay for the insurance, pay for all the other stuff. And now the government puts another 3% on payroll? I mean, that's a killer.
Yeah, and you know, you have with small businesses, the payroll continues whether you made any money or not. I mean, until you either go out of business. And so at least, a lot of times many small business owners have to bring money to their company to pay their employees just to get past the rough spots.
Well, I also want to give a plug to my website. If you go to my website and take a look at my February 2014 newsletter, and you can get one there. If you're not signed up for it, we send it out monthly. It's free. But in the last one, I talk about the impact of healthcare on the cost of Social Security. And I'll tell you, I think you got to start looking at these things. There's some other things in there about organizing your financial records and so forth and so on. But one thing I want to say is that you've got to plan for the future, and you've got to put money away. But we need the government in the same corner as we are in helping us do that and helping us get the money. And, you know, I just think I didn't even get to one part that I wanted to get to today, and that's about the ticking time bomb of Social Security and Medicare. And I'm telling you, we've got some major, major concerns in this country. And the problem is, most Americans don't want to go into it. It's just like I talk to people about their retirement plan. Most people spend more time planning a vacation than they ever do looking at their portfolio and really understanding their investments. When I sit down with people and I show them what their investment's really doing, or what I usually find out what it's really not doing, and I show it to them, they're kind of amazed. They say, "Well, that's not the reports I'm getting." And I say, "Well, I know, but you know, they're not showing you the whole picture. You got to look at the whole thing." And you need to be informed. There are things you can do to inform yourself. Carl, how does somebody get a hold of you?
Telephone number at Warren Allen is 503-255-8795, and I can be reached on the web at warrenallen.com.
And you can check me out at pfgwm.com, and we're located at 555 Southeast 99th Avenue, Suite 103. In Portland, Oregon, and our numbers are 877-50-PRICE, toll-free, 877-50-PRICE, or 503 253-3000. And I do want to mention again, next Saturday, live on the air, we're going to have Harry Dent. We're going to be talking about his new book called The Demographic Cliff, How to Survive and How to Prosper During the Great Deflation of 2014-2019. Most of you know who've been listening to my show, our show here for years, we've been talking to Harry Dent, and Harry Dent's been predicting that we're going to have a correction in the market, and he's pretty much predicted that it's going to be somewhere first quarter, second quarter of 2014. Now, there's a lot of other economists out there, and if you go in and you check out other economists, you'll see that a lot of people are predicting the same kind of thing. And we talked a little earlier about stop losses and protecting yourself. Look, this is the time when you need to have a preservation of principal portfolio. You need to have something to protect you on the downside. I'm all for taking aggressive investments if you can afford to take the loss if you get hit. But you need to talk to your advisor. And there's a lot of good advisors out there. There's a lot of good, caring advisors out there that if you sit down and you talk to your advisor, they'll listen to you and they'll communicate with you. But you need to also communicate with them. And if something's bothering you about your portfolio, you need to sit down with your advisor, look them in the eye and say, listen, I'm not happy with this. I think we need to maybe do something a little more conservative. Or, you know, I want you to put some stop losses in my program because I just can't stand it. I couldn't stand another 30 or 40% correction in the market, and I couldn't stand to see my portfolio down. If you tell your advisor that, I got to believe most advisors are going to say, I understand your concern. Let's put a strategy in place right now to protect you. And I think they'll do it. And I'm telling you, I'm sounding the bell here to tell you, you need to do that. If you're not doing it, you're not going to be a happy camper somewhere in the middle of this year. You're not going to be happy. And, there's a little TV show that my grandkids really like, and I can't remember the name of the show, but I know my granddaughter keeps saying, I'm not happy, Bob. I'm not happy. And you know what? You're going to not be happy. So you need to take a look at your portfolio, make some defensive measures now, plan for the worst, and hope for the best. You're listening to Investing Simplified. We'll be back next week with Harry Dent as our special guest. Carl, have a great weekend.
You too, Chuck.
And we'll be back next Saturday.
Next Saturday it is.
For Investing Simplified. Thank you very much.
Price Financial Group Wealth Management.